Welcome to ADHD is Over, a new podcast on a seemingly old label that we're going to be peeling off. Join my wife, Tatiana, and I as we journey with our family, the Wyden family, through the land of confusing information. We're going to visit both sides and let you decide because the power is with you. Welcome to ADHD is Over.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast. Glad you're here because we got an awesome episode with my dear friend, Grammy award-winning music producer and Ohio resident, an awesome human, Rich Jacques. Welcome, Rich.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Oh, it's so good to have you here. I want to talk to you about an experience you recently had in India. It is called Panchakarma, and we'll get into what that means and what that is. And what fascinated me when you shared this with me, since this is a podcast around attention, ADHD, and such, is what you said about how present this treatment made you, how much in the present moment you felt you were during and after, and mostly during the treatments, right? So let's start with that. Let's start with attention. And I'm going to ask you a question that I ask all my podcast guests, which is, to you, what is ADHD?
Okay. That's a good question. I think for me, it was always a struggle with focus. Like starting when I was young, I had trouble in school, and my parents would, you know, make me sit in my room for 2 hours, and I would seriously sit there and look at the wall for 2 hours. Like, I would try to read, and I would read the same page 4 times. I'm like, I don't know what I just read. Like, I couldn't get still enough to, I would just constantly be distracted and like forget what I was doing. And so for me, just simply focusing on one thing. Wait, what was the question again?
I love it. The question was, what is ADHD?
Yeah, that's what it is in a nutshell. But, and you know, and the inverse, as you know, is hyper-focusing, where if there's something I really love doing, I can hyper-focus like no one's business. So I could sit there and produce a song for 14 hours and not realize that, you know, any time went by. But then if just a simple task, I'd be like, wait, what am I doing again? Like, you know,
yeah.
And I was always confused by that. That, I mean, the huge difference in it, you know, because, you know, by contrast, you're like, wait, why can't I do that with everything? Why is that so difficult? And even, you know, even in relationships, like having that focus of that's required in connecting with someone, like losing that, like, and then once you start trying, then it all goes off the rails, you know, because then you're thinking about it, and then that thought cycle, and then that just goes bananas, right?
Right. Yeah, no, that's great. I hear you on this hyper-focusing, right? Because they say that's one of the superpowers of ADHD. And then I hear people talk about, well, you can hyper-focus on something you love, but when you're bored or something you don't like kids don't like a lot of the subjects at school or how it's taught,
right,
then they check out. Because you're not in love with that moment, with the activity. So it's kind of like not really a matter of a deficit of attention, but what should be paid attention to, right? And are you forced to pay attention to something?
Right, yeah, being forced to pay attention never works.
Right, we know that.
That's not a good set. But, you know, as you know, like as we had talked about before, like a lot of this, I'm really waking up to the fact that a lot of it is this feeling of safety. And if I don't feel safe in my body, like there's no way I could pay attention because I'm always looking for an exit, you know?
And that's a great example. And I always share this, you know, like veterans, when they go to war, to come back, they have PTSD, right? Then they go into a restaurant, sit in the restaurant. They know where the exit door is. They know who's coming in. They know all, they can sort of take in all this information because they want to feel safe. They don't want to get attacked, shot at, right? So that hypervigilance of like, I need to know what's happening and everything.
Yeah.
That's due to a past trauma.
Yeah.
And then you don't feel safe.
Yeah. And it's brutal.
Yeah. It's not a good feeling. Mm-hmm. I know I can relate to that. So let's go into what the hell is Pancha Karma?
That is a good question. Well, it's, I had just gotten really turned on to it. A friend of mine had been going to India before the pandemic. He was going every year for like 14 years straight. And basically Panchakarma, it's Ayurvedic health, and which has been around for thousands of years. And when you go do Panchakarma at a proper clinic, usually it's a month cycle. And they recommend a month because that's the kind of the arc. That's the amount of time it takes to really relax your complete system. And you kind of need that for it, kind of builds on itself, or actually does the opposite. It unbuilds on itself. And from what I understand of it is it gets your system down to zero. So it's diet. It's a lot of, they use a lot of oils on your body. They build these things called bastis, which are these clay structures they build over your organs, and they pour hot oil and let them soak into your organs. And what happens is over the first couple of weeks, they'll soak all this oil into your organs, and the oil, it pulls all the toxins and it empties it in your stomach. And then the last part of the treatment, you do these enemas that pull all the oil out of your stomach and out of your system. So after a month, you have no toxins in your system, like it's all pulled out. And it's really an experiential thing where you have to feel like, I've never felt that amazing in my life, where you just feel like you're plugged into the universe. Wow. by the end of this thing, in a way where physically you feel safe, because you, from the inside, you're not being pulled in all directions. You're just clean. And it was the first time where I really understood that concept of sitting on a park bench and doing nothing and just feeling complete joy and bliss. And it was incredible, because it's like, I actually don't need anything to feel happy. It's like, it's coming from within me, and whatever happens is cool. And in the West, we've been so mentally trained that our happiness exists in this event that happens externally. And it was the first time, like, because, you know, you read all these things, you know, all these things, and intellectually I've known that for, you know,
yeah,
you can read that from a million different sources, but to actually experience it, it really clicks, and you're like, oh, that's what they're talking about. It's like, you can't wish it into existence. It, like, it is, it's already there. It's just been covered up.
And you told me, you're the one who told me about Jim Carrey, right?
We talked about
what he says, what is it? I wish everybody would get what they think they want, so they would realize it's not really
what they need. It's not really what they want. Yeah, because, I mean, in the West, we've been trained this carrot on a stick thing, where it's like, oh yeah, one more thing, and it's in the future. And it's like, unless you're feeling happy right now, unless you're feeling that sense of peace and joy right now, it ain't going to happen in the future. It's just not.
Yeah.
It's not there.
It's not a thing that's going to solve it, or a person that's going
to solve it. There's nothing to get it. It's, you have it, and then you come from that place, you live your life and have experiences.
Yeah.
But the experiences don't bring it to you. You already have it.
Right.
And it was the first time where I really, like, physically experienced that, which was so profound. And then, you know, it really, like, a heightened state of that lasted for about 2 months after I got home, where I was really just like, wow. Like, you know, I got back to New York City and I was just like, everyone looks so lovely.
Yeah.
And wasn't annoyed by, I wasn't reacting to anything, because I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
But it's really, it's an amazing experience that I wish everyone could have. And wow, to really reprogram yourself to be like, oh, the problem is I'm covering up my joy that already exists with all these things in the West that, like, we've gotten used to, but
yeah,
it's bizarre once you're coming from the other side, like, wait, how did we get used to this? And where did we start going down this path? 'Cause it's kind of bananas.
Yeah. No, I mean, you bring up a good point that, you know, we live in a society where distraction is encouraged by media, social media, right? Even just you walk outside in LA, we're not in LA right now, but you're in a big city and there's billboards and there's vendors and there's like signs and smells. And, you know, India, I'm sure, is like on that on steroids.
Oh, but, yeah, yeah.
But the idea that we are so, like you said, the carrot on the stick, you got to get a good grades to get a good job, good career, then you can buy the nice house and the car and get the wife and the kids, and it sort of just never ends, right?
Well, it never ends, and then and you know, if you've never stopped to think, wait a minute, do I really want that?
Yeah.
Because I think we're all trained that this is what we're supposed to want, and I think people are way weirder than they, you know, than they're able to let you in on. But like, not everybody wants the same thing. And like, you might not want that stuff, but like, if you don't examine that, you're just going on autopilot and then wondering like, oh, why do I not feel fulfilled? Why do I not feel happy? Yeah. It's just like, well, maybe you don't know what you want. Maybe you don't know your real desires.
Or you've never... Which fits into what you're saying, right? You've never actually allowed yourself to stop and kind of like in your experience, when do we ever allow ourselves to stop unless you do a silent retreat or you do something like that, right? And those pauses are so like vital for receiving information from your own higher self or universe.
For real calibration. But the system, like it kind of works by never letting you settle.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting because when you go to Panchakarma, they recommend the whole time you don't exercise, you don't read, you don't really do much of anything. You just rest. And the whole philosophy, as far as I understand it, is that once your body settles, it knows how to heal itself.
Mm.
You just have to get out of the way.
Yeah.
And if you get out of the way for a month, it starts healing a lot. And, you know, the doctor there, he's cured people of cancer. He's cured like profound things. That it's simply a matter of letting the body, nurturing the body, relaxing it, letting it do what it naturally knows how to do.
Yeah.
And we've built up this whole system in the West of suppressing, and that makes things worse over time. But this completely relaxes and allows and just naturally balances your system.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up suppression because I'm a big believer that like anxiety and depression, these are results of like this restlessness.
Yeah.
Like this worry that I'm not going to make it in the future or...
Oh, it's a brutal one.
You know, the anxiety that you're not enough. You have to have more stuff. You have to be in another relationship, buy more. Just, I can just feel it talking about it and it's so unsettling and therefore it feels so unsafe that you can't be in the world and be in the moment.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And if you can't be in the moment, you can't really make a proper decision because you're coming from a program, not from like actual present moment, like, oh, what's actually here right now that needs to be done. And there's not much that needs to be done. And it's crazy that myself and watching other people where you're like, wow, you're going in circles, spending a lot of energy doing something that maybe gets you even farther away from who you are.
Yeah.
And that's going to affect everything. That's going to affect your health. That's going to affect your relationships. And if you just sat there and did nothing, you would be better off. Right.
Oh, I can be accused of that too. Yeah. I've been definitely spinning in circles, especially for the last year, going through this recent kind of relationship breakup or ending. And then thinking about what do I do next, you know, going through a divorce, like spawning, if you will, right? I'm like, who am I? What's next?
Yeah.
And the most joy I found exactly in those moments when I'm like, I'm actually good right now.
Mm.
I don't need to re-enter the grind to make my 10 million to then what?
To do what?
Fill in the blank. There's nothing for me to fill in. It's like to be finally happy. To have enough, I have enough. And when I look around my life, my circle of friends, the relationship with my boy's mom, with my boys, where I live, the abundance that I've created over the last 5-10 years, it's like, I'm okay.
You're all right. Yeah.
You're all right. Like, I'm okay. And so to get to that point, that stopping that spinning for me was huge. It still sometimes shows up.
Yeah.
But it's always related to a lack of self-worth.
Yeah, always, right?
I'm not good enough. Maybe I won't make it. Maybe I won't fill my potential. But all that stuff.
But what does that even mean? You know?
It's just, again, programming.
It's just programming, yeah.
Because I like what you said when we talked earlier, was it last week? We had our men's group. We talked about purpose. And I remember you saying it was really powerful. And you said, well, I mean, I think the purpose of life is just to be in the moment and enjoy, not to overthink it and not to try to have a purpose. And, you know, that kind of starts that spinning again.
Well, I think the purpose is know yourself and know actually, you know, your true desire. And this is something we had talked about before, but that this was always a curiosity of mine where, you know, that the quote ascribed to the Buddha where he said the desire is the cause of all suffering, which the problem with that is it's actually a mistranslation. And the Sanskrit actually meant it was closer to craving. So desire is benign. Like desire, like you wouldn't be alive with no desire. But it's like, oh, that sounds cool, but fine if it doesn't happen. But craving, the problem with craving is like, I need that or I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah.
And that is what he really meant, is craving is the cause of suffering.
Yeah.
So if you think you need something to be happy, you're in big trouble. It doesn't matter what it is.
So it's that attachment versus detachment.
Yeah, once you attach to something, you're in trouble. Yeah. So the trick is to constantly realize when you're attaching to something and let it go. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a relationship, food, alcohol, whatever.
That's hard.
But yeah, it's hard. But what psychologically, if you can unwind that and be like, wait, why do I think that's going to do something in the future? Like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And really reprogram yourself to really be like, I'm fine. And, you know, maybe that happens and maybe it doesn't.
Yeah. Like if,
but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a hard, that denunciation, right?
Yeah. 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 But we're not, and that's the thing in a consumerism society, you're trained to want something that you're trained to believe there's this void that you need to fill.
And it's interesting because the stuff we buy, right? Let's say you want a flat screen TV or a new car or a new relationship.
Yeah.
It does give us that temporary
pleasure. I can see that dopamine hit. And that,
We think, oh yeah, that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
But it lasts for like 3 days.
When it goes away, you feel like shit. Yeah. Yeah.
Then it's like, what's next? Maybe that wasn't the right thing.
I know. And then you go searching for something else and something else.
But bigger TV, bigger this, right?
And we all get caught up in that. But it's, you know, if you can catch yourself, that's the thing, and realize like not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and I love the whole, you know, Sisyphus myth of pushing the rock up the hill. And, you know, he was punished by Zeus. So he had to start at the bottom of the hill, push the rock up the hill. And as soon as he got to the top, it would roll back to the bottom. He had to do it again and again for eternity.
Oh, jeez.
And the only way out is to fall in love with pushing the rock. And then it just doesn't matter. I'm at the bottom, I'm in the middle of the top. So what? This is awesome.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that is truly the only way out of that predicament, which that's what our predicament is. It's like, you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I wanted to talk about this, because it seems to me like if we can train parents to then parent their children in a way that they're not forcing them to achieve something. They're not pushing them into the Ivy League school track, but they're actually really present to what, like you said, the child can discover his or her own desires and say, yeah, I don't want to do creative writing right now, or I don't want to do sports or whatever. And we just allow them to unfold. The issue is that it has to happen in a safe environment. They have to feel safe, like you said. Right?
That's huge. And what you just said, it's all about listening. And it's such a, I mean, that skill should be taught in first grade.
Yeah.
Like if there's anything, if you don't know how to listen to another person and hear what they need, like you're going to impose your needs on them.
Yeah.
And there's a cycle of that I see happening everywhere, that like we're not great listeners.
No, you're right. It's definitely a skill that's just listen.
Yeah.
But there's listening, there's hearing, there's listening between the lines, right? There's not, like you said, not getting into your own head about your what you're going to say next.
Yeah.
But really just be present. And that, yeah, that's not taught. And especially if the parents are not that, if they never slow down, they're like on the hamster wheel, go, 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 go. And then the child needs attention and they're like, honey, I can't, I'm busy, da, 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 whatever. That just creates an unsafe environment. And then the child does not open up, does not feel listened to, seen, heard, whatever. Then there's a feeling of disconnection, dysregulation, you're not safe. And now you're got to go to school and learn a bunch of shit you don't want to learn. No wonder kids are like, ah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the it's external and internal because we haven't been taught to listen to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we you know, take notes from our parents and be like, oh, I got to get one with, like, you know, move the ball further down the line. But like, and you know, my job is basically I'm a professional listener, and it didn't even occur to me. This is like a recent, like in the last 4 years where I'm like, I'm not actually listening. Like, I'm not listening to what, like, I have this idea of what I think is right or wrong in recording, but, and imposing that on someone where I'm like, wait, if I just do nothing and just sit here and really try to understand, like, I actually don't know. I don't think we all hear the same things. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think we are ever really seeing or hearing the same thing, but you don't know that until you really listen. And then all of a sudden things occur to you. You're like, that's what you want? Like, but I have to really get out of my own way to get to that point. And then, because it's not about me, it's about them experiencing this thing that, and you can only, the only guide is following their enthusiasm, where you can see them light up and you're like, oh, that means something to you, that does something, let's keep going and see where that goes. Even if it's so counterintuitive to what I would do, it's amazing where like that strangely works, and I don't know why it works. It's not really technically the way I would go, but like I guess that's what we're doing because it excites you.
It's what they came to you for.
It's what they came to me for, and it's not about me being, you know, if we're both excited, I think we're on the right path. But if just I'm excited and they're kind of like, yeah, whatever, that's not the path.
Yeah.
And then when you get three people, I think the real thing is when you get three people in the room and everyone's excited, you're really onto something because you found this small little window of like, wow, this works for three people. There's some magic there, you know, and you keep subtly following that path and you achieve something that's truly special. Mm. Because if it works for three nervous systems, then there's something happening, right?
Yeah.
And that's exciting, yeah.
I like that, yeah. And did you, that brings up that question we talked about earlier about like, it's like Jim Carrey saying, you know, wish once you get there, you realize it's not what you want.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
How did you feel when you won the Grammy? Was it like, you know, most people would be like, oh my God, I made it. This is amazing. It's all amazing and yay. And you know,
well, no, it's, I think we talked about this before too, where it kind of backfired on me where, you know, I got that and then it's like, now I feel like an imposter. Like, wait, why did they give this to me? Mm. And like, now I have to prove myself or something. Like it's a strange thing. And awards are strange things.
Yeah.
You know, because yeah, it's like almost like a finish line. And then you're at the starting line and you're like, oh my God, like I can't rest. Like now it's, you know,
right. Right.
And it's, yeah, it's a bizarre idea that, yeah, it kind of messed with my head for a bit where I kind of didn't know where to put it. You know, I wish it came with a ton of money.
Right. The big check.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I can relate to it because as I was unpacking and setting up my new place, there's a bin out there with all awards from like commercials and films I've done. It's probably, I don't know how many, 12, but they're all in a bin, dusty. One of them, the wings broke off, the other one. And I looked at it, I'm like, it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because really, I agree, when I was getting some of these awards, I was thinking in my head like, well, my film wasn't really the best film, but you know, thank you. So kind of invalidating the whole thing and I'm not that great, an imposter, whatever. Yeah, it's just sitting there. It's not like, shaking, you know, it's different. I get it. If you get an Oscar and you're out there and you're really working, you're hitting the pavement and your agent and manager and publicist, you know, yes.
But even at that, you know, it'll like maybe business wise, it'll open some doors yeah. or whatever, but it doesn't mean you're better or worse. Like it's just, you're right where you were. I mean, the best, Dave Chappelle won that same year for a comedy album he did. And he gave the best speech where he accepted the award and he just said, well, see you Monday. That's really what it is. Yeah. It's like business as usual.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I get it. It's like buying a new car. Like you get that award, you're like, you feel great.
Oh, there's a rush and it's exciting being there. And the whole experience is great. And then you're left with it where you're like,
yeah.
So it's kind of a peak experience. And then you're like back down to the bottom of the hill pushing the rock. And you're like,
got to do it again.
Oh, man, do I have to win another one to get to that point again? Right. Like, are you kidding me?
It's
that took 25 years.
That's a lot of pressure, yeah, you know, when really you get is. To the top. And, you know, yeah. we look at people like Philip Seymour Hoffman and other celebrities who were at the top and then they like destroyed their lives with drugs or whatever, suicide. And you're like, really? Like,
no, I get it. The pressure mounts and mounts. And that's why the only way out is being in the moment and like, where's my joy in this moment?
Yeah.
Like always looking for that. Where can I find joy in this moment? And not find it, but where it already exists, where am I covering up my joy in this moment? Right. Really more the question.
Because at the core, we are love and joy.
Yeah.
And so uncovering that, like, what's his name? Michelangelo, right? Like the statue.
Yeah, exactly. It's already there.
It's already there. David's already in the block, chipping away all the bullshit and all the programming and all the negative self-talk and the fear, right? All that and chipping that away and then just being okay with nothing, essentially.
With nothing, yeah.
I had this moment, I think I may have shared this with you before, where in one of the programs, I mean, there was homework, and one of the questions was, make a list of all the items that, the possessions that you really would have a hard time if they were suddenly gone, right? Mm-hmm. Like in a fire or earthquake or just your possessions that you really value. And I was like, crickets. I'm like, my hard drives with the photos, but there was nothing like,
yeah.
I thought there was going to be a few things coming out. And literally I was like, I don't have anything in my life that I would be devastated if, other than photo albums of my past that I would like to share with the kids and their photos on a drive. And obviously important files on drives, like family documents, legal stuff. Mm-hmm. Other than that, nothing. And I felt so good.
Beautiful, right?
Yeah. It was so good.
It's very liberating.
It is. And yet I have some stuff in the shed or in storage that I'm like, it'd be nice to keep. But if it's gone, I'm like, it's gone.
I had this experience where, as you know, I like the beginning of the pandemic, I had some health issues not related to COVID or anything. And I kind of had to stop doing everything I was doing and spent like a year just trying to heal and went to a bunch of witch doctors and whatnot, trying to do different things. And it was really a test in surrender, you know, the whole thing. But I lived at my friend's guest house up in Montecito, which was amazing, so beautiful, and really allowed me this experience of just like surrendering and not, because I was so caught in the grind in LA and trying to achieve all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. And it got me out of that. And then I, after a year being there, I took 2 years and I traveled around the world doing all these different projects. And I was a nomad where I didn't have a home. I just didn't live anywhere. I just traveled around. And so I had my stuff in my friends at their storage unit, but in their guest house. And then they had a flood in Montecito. And it like, so then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I don't own anything. That's kind of weird, but kind of liberating in a way where, because when I moved to Ojai, I was like, fortunately I had my guitars in their upstairs room. So I guess that would be my one thing. I had some guitars left that thank God they didn't get ruined. But like, it's, it was kind of beautiful, like moving here and starting from scratch where I'm like, who am I now?
Right.
And what attracts me right now? Because what do I miss? I'm like, I really don't miss anything.
Yeah.
I really don't need anything. And it's like really just burn it all up in the fire and just, okay, where are we now?
I like that.
It's a beautiful experience.
And it kind of goes back to what you were saying. It's like, if we're just in this moment and we just find the joy, then we'll know if we have everything we need.
And we do.
We do.
And we always do.
Yeah. It's the true abundance, right? When people hear abundance, and I used to think the same thing. It's like, oh, there's going to be heaps of money and there's going to be all the jobs coming in and just like, yeah. And then I got that. No, actually abundance is that what you need will be provided if you trust.
It's always right there. And that's the amazing, the beautiful thing about being in India. You see these people that are like, they have nothing. It's so poor and they're happy and they're like generous. Like they have nothing to give and they're offering you, what do you need, you know?
Right.
And there's this, it's so like heart opening to be surrounded by that. Just this joy for the sake of joy.
Yeah.
Not because of anything. A friend of mine, years ago, he got married and the gift he wanted everyone to give for their wedding was he was building this, this library for this school in Africa where they were getting a bunch of books in this building together, and they wanted to gift this to this small little community. And, you know, they went there and they dedicated this, you know, this library. And then they were asking the people there, like, so what else do you need? And they were like, we didn't even need a library. It was like, this is already a bonus. So, right. You know, but I think we're so trained to what more. And it's just like,
right. And that brings me that's a good point. I recently realized that I don't believe in these terms like fortunate and less fortunate.
Mm.
Because when we call someone less fortunate, we're saying, so there's...
It says more about us than them.
Yeah, exactly. We're like, well, I have everything that I think you should also have.
Right.
So therefore, you must be less fortunate. I'm more fortunate, right? Versus just, we're souls on our individual journeys, and that person is now in Africa living in a hut, and I'm in Beverly Hills in my mansion, and we have our own fucking path.
Yeah.
And there's no like, oh, poor you, and let me build a library for you. Now, I'm not saying those things are not nice or heartfelt or needed at times, but if we just listened to what they actually needed or wanted.
Well, and that's the listening thing.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of imposing what, oh, this is what I think you need.
Yeah.
Which is the whole white savior thing, as opposed to like, do you even need anything? Or maybe I need something from you.
Right.
You know, I always thought like a great reality show would be kind of a reverse Beverly Hillbillies.
I had the same thought like years ago.
Wouldn't that be, but get a tribe from Africa, bring them to Beverly Hills and
do a swap, right?
Flip it and see the reality of what that really,
yeah,
that experience would really be. But
I love that idea. I've always said that we want to do a show where you take these spoiled kids from Beverly Hills and you send them to a village in Africa, and now you're going to go build some shit and fucking donate your time and eat what they eat, and you're going to stay there.
Yeah.
Until we say you're done, you know,
it'd be amazing.
Oh my God. And just great social commentary, great interactions, and probably amazing transformations.
Yeah.
Where some of these kids would come back and be like, oh my God, like,
I prefer nothing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause the more we have, the more we're going to be attached and worried. Like we're going to spend time.
And the more we get distracted from ourselves, and that really is the thing. And I think that's the core of ADD. We're so distracted from ourselves. You know, and then it becomes a physical thing.
Yeah,
that your body distracts you from yourself.
Absolutely, we're so Gabor Mate calls it it's a coping mechanism because you're not comfortable in the moment. It's not safe.
Yeah, it's not comfortable. Safe.
So you want to be over there where the shiny thing is, or you want to just not be here.
Yeah,
and like you said, if we can be here in the present moment and it's safe and comfortable, and I don't mean safe and comfortable with warm blankets all the time and nothing bad's happening, but you have a groundedness about yourself and you know, I'll be fine. If we raise kids that way, I just don't believe ADHD has, or that kind of behavior has a chance of showing up.
Yeah. Well, I was telling you on one of our earlier conversations, I was in Amsterdam and I was just walking back from the grocery store. I picked up some groceries. And while I was walking, I had this overwhelming feeling of like, I don't feel safe. And there's no reason that I don't feel safe right now. it doesn't make any sense. I'm in a safe environment. It's a nice day. I'm just walking with these groceries. Like, why does my body not feel safe? And it was really disturbing where I'm like, I don't get it, you know? And it really showed me, like, this is the anxiety. This is the distraction. This is like, my body doesn't feel safe.
Could have been triggered by something, right? Because it's childhood trauma type of stuff where you don't feel safe because of a sound or a person's hair color, whatever, like whatever it is in your life, right? And then mild trigger, suddenly don't feel safe. And again, it's proved that, you know, things happen in our past, and it's not like, oh, suddenly you need to take a pill because you don't feel safe in the streets of Amsterdam. Oh, you have anxiety, so you probably should, you know, get that diagnosed. It's like, no, that's a Band-Aid.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, and I get the impulse, like, oh, well, I'll just go to a bar and drink and suppress that. And like, and yeah. Which is what we've been trained to do, is just suppress it and dodge it and weave. But like, to truly like just sit with it and experience it, be like, question it. Like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like, that's bizarre. Like, it's not for any reason that I don't feel safe. I just don't feel safe.
I agree with you. Yeah, we suppress a lot, and we are also really afraid of, I'll call them negative emotions. You know, I don't like to use negative, positive, right or wrong, but let's call them negative, right? The sort of anger, sadness, all that. We're taught to, those are bad. Don't feel them. Just be happy. Here, drink, or here, have a piece of cake, or hey, don't worry, smile, you know, get up, it's fine. Versus really just like, exploring, letting them have their emotions.
Mm. Right? What was the Pixar movie that illustrated that?
Inside Out?
Inside Out, yeah.
Yeah.
Where sadness was kind of the hero of the whole thing, and they were trying to like push her out of the picture the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so true. I mean, I can relate to this right now. I'm going through periods of my life where I have sadness come up. Grief of loss of relationship and so forth. And it's like, I don't want to feel it. It's like, it's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable, yeah.
But not like people say, oh, it hurts so much, like heartache. It's not necessarily pain. It's just a discomfort. It's this awkward, not knowing what to do with it and wanting to feel better. It's almost the wanting to feel better hurts more
than
the actual emotion trying to be expressed.
Because you're not accepting it.
Yeah, I'm resisting it.
You're resisting, yeah. And then if you can fully embrace and accept all those things, it's the suffering is the running away from it.
Right.
But to truly accept it, it's like there's no suffering in that. It's just like, oh, this is curious. I wonder how deep this goes. Like, and wonder what it's actually telling me, because it's telling me something.
Right.
I'm out of alignment with my true self.
Right.
Yep. And if I'm not listening, it's going to get louder.
And that's what I was sharing with you earlier. This morning I woke up with some sadness around this past relationship, and I realized, oh, I haven't fully grieved it. I haven't fully sat with the discomfort of the sadness, the anger, all of the stuff that's involved in the grieving process, right? And I realized, oh shit, yeah, I've been trying to just like let it be over, let it be done, you know, get it out of my system, my head, because I don't like the discomfort. But I got to sit with it.
Yeah. And then, you know, I've always been curious about like sad music, because there's a real attraction I have for real.
Same here.
Depressing, sad music. But like, I think there is a gift in it, as long as you know when to let it go. But like in those moments, that's what you need. As long as there's a door or a window open that you can rise from it and not get stuck there.
In the bunker.
Because then you get addicted to being down there.
I've definitely had some moments like that where I would listen to music that my partner and I used to listen to, and it just brought back these good, beautiful memories, which are beautiful. And then the sadness would come in, and then I would wallow in it
and
listen to one more song, and suddenly I'd be like, oh shit, I'm totally gone. I'm like, I got to pull myself out. I got to shake it off, you know? I get it. So what's this? So let's go back to Pancha Karma. So I think when you were talking about this, right, I believe that there's huge like benefits to this for even children, like for
especially, oh yeah, for everybody, yeah,
right? Especially children that were, you know, diagnosed with ADHD. I believe taking a child over to India and doing a real month in a clinic like that, to me, sounds amazing.
No, it's amazing, and it's, you know, it's not for everybody, because it's not how we're programmed. I think kids would have an easier time, maybe. Well, if there is suffering from extreme ADD, I mean, it'd be a thing. But in Ayurvedic health, it really, there are three doshas, three body types, and we all incorporate all three of them. But there's, you know, that an ADHD would basically be a vata imbalance, which is air. It's the mind. It's the, you know, that you're too much air. And it's just balancing the system is all it is. And once the system properly balances, I think for kids especially, they would get this amazing experience, this reference point of like, oh, this is what it feels like when I'm in balance. Mm. I never knew that.
Yeah.
You know, and kids would take to it really quick. Mm-hmm. And once you get that reference point, it's like, once you're off of it, you're going to be like, wait a minute, that's not who I am.
Yeah.
You know, because once you start identifying yourself with, oh, I'm this person that has ADHD, that's a problem. Because you're not. It's an experience you're having.
Right.
But you're not that person.
And then that's your reference point.
And that's your reference point, yeah. You know. So it's kind of grounding you in this state of who you actually are, which is beautiful.
I like that. And for our listeners, if parents are listening, you know, maybe look into Ayurvedic medicine. And there's many practitioners around in different cities, and, you know, depending on where you're at, and start talking about balancing that, right, based on the type of
I mean the real gift is, like, you know, where I went, and because it's India, it's actually affordable. I think the problem is when you get to the States, like, you know, there are people that do it well, but it's expensive. But like, if our healthcare system supported it and you actually had insurance cover it, and this was an actual thing, and a big part of it is it's preventative. It's preventative health. And they said there's certain parts in the world where they pay a doctor a monthly fee, and if you get sick, you stop paying them, which is a radically different idea, which I love that.
Yeah.
Right. Because then they're not doing their job if you're sick.
Like, that's interesting. Right? Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. I like that.
But it's that thing where these ideas, once they become more popular, more accessible to people, that they don't have to go to India, that they can actually experience it here. And for me, like, you know, I had the opportunity where I did an online a consultation with the doctor, and he, you know, he could read what was happening with me. You know, they do pulse readings every morning when you're in the Panchakarma clinic, which it's insane what they can discern from your pulse. Like, they can say, like, oh, you were in a car wreck 12 years ago. I see, like, crazy stuff that I don't understand how they do it. But, and online they do eye reading, and they can discern like what's happening with you just from your eyes. But it's really incredible, because it was so, you know, I'd spent 2 years with Western doctors. No one could figure out what was going on. Within 30 seconds, he knew exactly what was going on just looking at my eyes.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, that's my dude.
Yeah.
And everything he said when I went to India, it actually worked, which was incredible, you know. But like, these, they've known this stuff for thousands of years. Yeah. It's like, to them, it's so obvious. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, so if we, you know, if there were a way to bring more awareness to it and make it more accessible here, that, well, and part of it, we've been so trained in this Western medical system, which is not designed for health,
right?
Which is really bizarre, but it's basically a business designed for, you know, to suppress symptoms and make money.
Yeah.
That's what it is, basically. But to truly balance your system, that's not really the what it's designed to do.
And there seems to be no effort in researching and accepting and integrating those kind of medicines that have been around much longer than Western medicine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just a radically different mindset, a different place to come from. But if we're talking about balancing the system, that seems like it should be obvious, right?
Yeah.
And part of it too is, like, you know, our food system over here is really in trouble. when you notice that, I noticed that especially traveling around, there were certain places where you're like, oh, the food's better here because the raw ingredients are pure. And you notice, and you get back to America and you're like, wait, why is everything all processed and weird and cooked in oils? And like, it's really like, no wonder everyone's not in balance with their bodies.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's a huge, you know, parents often ask me like, well, what is it? Is it ADHD about, is it food dyes or is it like diet? And yes, all those things.
It's all of it.
Right. It adds to the imbalance. Mm-hmm. But really the core issue is more of a nervous system imbalance, like traumatic experiencing throughout the child's life. And then when you add bad diet, food dyes, too much media,
you're so far, you know, and then, you know, the drug companies are having a field day where it's like, great.
Yeah.
More people to suppress. Keep
doing it. Yeah.
Like there's tons of money in it. It's fantastic, you know, but it's just a system that's been built that perpetuates itself where it's like, you can't even blame it. It's like, makes sense. It works.
Yeah. That's why this movement for me is all about awareness, letting parents know, look, there's the system, there's pharma, there's all these things that have been set up for you to believe that this is it, this is for life, this, you can't heal it, it's a pill, your child has a chemical imbalance, neurological issue. It's none of that. Mm. It's none of that. These are all just symptoms of a deeper rooted issue that we could treat.
Yeah.
Over time. Takes time though.
It takes time and it takes awareness and it really takes a village too. Like if you're surrounded by people that all have the same awareness that are supporting each other, it's a lot easier than you just going rogue and trying to figure this out yourself and find specific foods and specific things. But like, imagine like communities that are all in on the joke that they can all like, oh, we can support each other in this.
Yeah.
And there's a nurturing that happens psychologically and on a physical level. That, you know, and which is one of the things I like about OHI, there is this kind of nurturing element.
Yeah.
And people actually are aware of each other and there's this kindness and listening that happens here that I think that's why I ended up here, because that became attractive. I've been so many different places, and instantly when you're in a place, when you're in touch with your nervous system, you feel pretty quickly if this is for you or not.
Yeah.
And you get pretty discerning about what places like, no, I need to leave. This is not right for me.
I love what you said, because I felt the same way. Like, I feel like OHI is for people who are ready to slow down.
Right. Like, know, actually open to that experience. Because, you know, I was in LA for 20 years. And now when I go there, I flinch where I'm like, it's, oh, my God, how did I do it?
Insane. I know.
Yeah.
And I love LA. It served me also for over 22 years. And now when I'm here, I realize what I wanted there was this frenetic excitement, always some distraction. Oh, we wanted
the distraction, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
New people, parties, mm-hmm. new this, new that, and go out and do this, and yeah. And now I'm here and I'm going like, oh, I'm ready to slow down, but not like a guy who retires and suddenly doesn't do anything.
No, it's quite the opposite. Different.
Yeah.
It's you're discovering what your true enthusiasm is.
Yeah.
And that becomes a whole different path because... And that's the confusion, I think, where this idea of like work and effort and all this stuff is like, if you're doing something you're passionate about, it's not work.
Right.
And I can spend 14 hours a day and still have full energy doing, you know, if I'm doing something I love. And if I don't love it, I got about a half hour and I'm exhausted, you know?
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah. It's the same with me. There's things there's things we got to do for the taxes and family and, you know, I get it, but that's the pushing the rock up the hill. Right.
But also within those things, there's a reason you're doing it and find the joy in it, like reframe it.
Yeah.
But you have to get still to reframe it and be like, wait, I'm doing this because I enjoy having a family and like, I enjoy doing this because this supports me having a family and, you know, and constantly reassessing like, wait, why am I struggling with this when it's what I really want? And the more you reframe it, the more you become at peace with it. And you find the joy in doing even the things that you're like, maybe not be your, you know, first choice, but like the reason I'm doing this is because I love this. I love this life.
Yeah. That's good. I like that. I can use that around taxes and real estate and really be like, you know what? This allows me to have integrity. This allows me to have abundance. Then I can be there for myself, for my kids, you know?
Or if you can't find it, like, drop it and find the thing that does give you that, you know?
Right.
Because we're not slaves.
You can call up the IRS and say, look, so I've been doing this for 50 years and I'm not going to do it anymore.
Yeah, I'm not so into it.
Not feeling the joy. And you should do the same.
remember that movie Office Space?
Yeah.
And when the guys came in to give the assessment.
My favorite part.
We see you've been missing a lot of work. And he's like, yeah, I wouldn't say I missed it.
Right. I like how he... they're like, so, you know, give us a little rundown of what you do here at work. And he's like, yeah, not much. what do you mean, not much? Can you elaborate? Yeah, I just show up late, pretend I'm filing some reports, and then I take a break. I love it. It's one of my favorite movies. But it was really, again, a great commentary about, like, you know, like how many of us work at a job or a career that we
check out. Yeah,
check out. And it takes something to be like, no, fuck it. Mm-hmm. And of course, we don't do it with baseball bats and destroying printers, but we do it by saying, you know, I'm going to quit this. I'm going to go find something that I love.
Or, you know, just simply denying yourself for over a period of time, like it's going to turn into a health issue.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of those issues we see out there, cancer and just a lot of things that we go, well, it's unlucky, you got it. Sorry. No. I mean, it's all related to it's all psychosomatic, you know, and which is the good news because you're like, oh, if I clean up my act psychologically, spiritually with integrity and work on myself and let go of the blockages and the resistance and I'm more present and slow down, can actually heal it, like you said, right?
You can actually, and then you'll be attracted to healthier foods and healthier environments that won't bring on these symptoms.
Drain your energy and healthier people too.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And that's something I'm learning is that, you know, I've been choosing a lot of unhealthy environments and at times people, and God bless them, they're all lovely people and they were all teachers of mine, but, you know, to realize, oh, I want to trust my intuition from now on when I meet somebody where I can go, yeah, I don't feel the energy. It seems frenetic. It's, you know, it's not where I'm heading. Mm-hmm. And just say, thank you, but no thank you.
And be fine with it and not feel any guilt and not feel any, like...
Right, where in the past I would just jump into a relationship because it seemed fun, have a great time, and then suddenly feel like, oh, I can no longer be in this. I need to remove myself. Mm. It's too much. I went too far, too deep. And, you know, those are sad moments, but at the same time, it's a learning experience of like, look for healthy... like you said, food, healthy people, healthy environments that inspire and uplift.
Yeah, because you can feel the difference. Yeah. Like those people you're around, like, I just feel supported and this is great.
Inspired, yeah. This is cool. Well, hey, we could go on talking for hours, I know that, but I think we had a nice little roundabout going from attention to Panchakarma, which I want to put the link in the show notes for people interested in to see where you went, the clinic, right? And really spread the word that not just Panchakarma, but some of these modalities that are out there.
Right. And there are other modalities too that are similar. It's like all over the world that's they've had these practices for thousands of years. Yeah.
And I invite parents or anyone, even adults with so-called ADHDs, like, you know, might be worth it to invest a few grand, go to India and do that for a month. And see yourself transform in relationship to attention and focus, because that's probably how much money you spend in a few years on medication.
Spend way more than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so.
And also in frustration, like.
Right. Not just medication, but frustration. Mm-hmm. And I myself, I'm looking forward to hopefully in the next couple of years to go there and do a Panchakarma. So I'll report on that when I'm back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this was my dear friend and guest, Rich Jacques, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good.